Hello and welcome back to another episode of Inside the Asperger Studios. Today I'm joined with Ryan Litchfield, who is a PCM administrative assistant. He'll talk about what that is, what his job is, and what he sees himself doing in the future. So sit back, relax, and grab your favorite beverage, and I'll see you on the other side. See you there. Welcome back to another episode of Inside the Asperger Studios. Today on the show, I'm joined with Ryan Litchfield. Welcome to the show, Ryan.
Thank you, Reed. It's an honor to be here. I'm very happy to be here.
So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So when I was 2 years old, I was diagnosed with autism pervasive developmental disorder, not otherwise specified. So it was like under all of these different types of like autism, but there were definitely the signs and symptoms of the autism spectrum disorder, especially before the age of two. So I had trouble with, you know, eye contact. I had trouble expressing what I wanted, what I needed. I couldn't even talk or communicate. Right around that time, you know, my family was really concerned, and they actually had a book, they had a sign language book, because at one point they thought they were going to have to communicate with me via sign language. And so they had that, you know, as a part of that plan, just in case I wasn't able to like verbalize what I'm, you know, what I needed or something. I had, like I said, temper tantrums. It was definitely a struggle, like in the early stages of life. I did go through about hours and hours of applied behavioral analysis within my own home. I also went through speech therapy, occupational therapy. I went through social skills, pragmatics, types of groups, pretty much all the different types of services that you can think about. I did have special education services throughout my public school career. I did have aid support. I also had, you know, some counseling, especially when I was going through some of the rough patches right around middle and high school. I know elementary school was definitely challenging because I had trouble with like loud noises and had trouble with, you know, connecting with people my age. So then basically, you know, going forward, you know, middle school, you know, I tried to fit in, you know, trying to, you know, be part of a math club, being part of, you know, a band, you know, playing the alto saxophone and just trying to connect with people my own age. And then at that point, I went on to high school, and that was a tough transition for me. I had a family member that passed away. It was my grandmother, and I just remember that it was just difficult just getting adjusted to more students, more expectations, more just getting used to a different structure between middle and high school. I also, you know, went through some, you know, anxiety and depression too. So it definitely was a tough transition, but I think things really started to turn around for me when I went to, you know, into my junior year of high school. So me and another friend of mine, we were both on the spectrum. We both went to an elementary school in my town, and we shared our stories of, you know, being on the autism, you know, spectrum, you know, sharing challenges and the successes, and, you know, people were really inspired just to hear from those experiences. And I developed an autism support group, not actually an autism, like awareness group at the high school, because I was trying to, you know, get more educators, you know, teachers, students, you know, to get more aware of the autism spectrum and stuff. So, and I ended up, you know, my grades started getting better. You know, I really started to find, you know, success in the high school toward the end. And then I went on to college. I pursued my bachelor's degree in human services and rehabilitation. and also I pursued my certificate in aging services. And the reason I did that is, you know, one of the things that's really interesting is that there are a lot of adults that are like living within the United States, particularly, you know, like in this country. And there are more individuals now being diagnosed on the autism spectrum. And it's just the prevalence, you know, and the rates are just continuing to increase. And I think something that really just the insight that I got from, you know, those studies and something that really came to mind was, you know, I really do think at some point there needs to be more services and supports for adults on the autism spectrum.
I totally agree with that. I mean, I got so many ideas in my head about what kind of help I would love to do and create. It's just amazing. But anyways, first let's start off with, you went through ABA, right? Mm-hmm. How was that for you?
So ABA therapy was, I will say, kind of what my therapist told me at one point. I mean, there were good days and there were bad days. There were definitely its challenges, but there were also its successes. I have a really great relationship with my ABA therapist. And we also had some funny moments. Like, I'll give an example. Back in the day, there was, you know, McDonald's Happy Meal toys. I believe at that time, The Lion King was out at the time. And I believe I had a Mufasa action figure. And for some reason, I was reenacting the Mufasa death scene in The Lion King, which, you know, it's kind of like that interaction with objects, you know, associating objects with, you know, toys, with, you know, how to play with them and so forth. And then the other part I will mention too is I also learned, actually it was through my ABA therapist friend, you know, learning how to ride a bike. And that's how I really just enjoyed, you know, going on a bike. I haven't been on a bike for a while, but I definitely enjoyed it when I was younger.
So you are one of the few who've really had a good experience with their ABA.
Yes. And actually she and I presented in a psychology class when I was in high school, actually to several psychology classes when I was in high school. And we also presented up at the college to students and staff. So, you know, we had some really great opportunities to connect there and, you know, to, you know, share the perspective from, you know, my lived experiences, and also, you know, giving the ABA therapist, you know, the opportunity to, you know, share the perspective that, you know, her viewpoint as well. Yeah. You know, I think that's really important, you know, especially because I think that's, you know, and people are saying like, oh, you know, they're trying to focus on, you know, these types of therapies and stuff early, you know, in as soon as an individual is diagnosed. And pardon me. So what's, you know, supposedly what I hear is that when they catch it, you know, sooner, or, you know, when they find out that, you know, somebody has autism, you know, they try to go through these different types of therapies and stuff sooner rather than later. You know, and there are families that, you know, find loved ones that are having, you know, success and that are making progress in their lives. Unfortunately, I can't say that for all families and loved ones, but there have been clearly a lot of success stories. You know, you see all the, you know, the famous autism advocates out, you know, not just like in my state of Massachusetts, but also you know, within the United States and just globally, you know. And I think in the context of like ABA, you know, and something that I will mention too is, you know, I don't think it should be looked at as, you know, oh, it's the best thing in the world. And I don't think I should look at it as it's the worst thing in the world. I'm kind of neutral. And I kind of look at it as, you know, being a tool, like a tool, like a toolkit for trying to, you know, it's kind of like the beginning stages of communication and the beginning stages of socialization. The reality is like, I mean, I've come across various social situations where the reality is that not everything is black and white, as they say, and there's more shade of gray. So, and I know people will have their opinions, you know, some people are for, you know, ABA, others are against ABA, you know, and I, you know, 100%, you know, respect that. And, you know, and I can understand both perspectives, but I also think, you know, it's kind of like I'm trying to look at, you know, trying to find the silver lining per se too, you know, but I know people have those different experiences, but, you know, it's kind of like counseling where, yeah, you go see a therapist and then, you know, you get some guidance and support and stuff. But at the end of the day, it's like, this is your life. And this is also like, you know, you're going to take, you know, you're going to make the choices, you're going to make the decisions, especially once you get into adulthood and stuff too, like, you know, when it comes to independence and that sort of a thing. So I think ABA has truly helped me to get this far in my life. And I mean, if it weren't for my parents' advocacy and my family's advocacy and the great relationship I have with the ABA therapist, I don't think I'd be here today.
All right. Now, do you have ADHD as well?
As far as I know, to the best of my knowledge, I do not have ADHD. I just have autism, you know, I'm basically now today it's called autism spectrum disorder. But as I mentioned earlier, the actual diagnosis was pervasive developmental disorder, not otherwise specified. I'm glad they simplified, you know, they took all of these different, you know, diagnoses and then they just put everything together to, you know, autism spectrum disorder now.
Now, during your time in high school and even in grammar school, what was it like for you making friends?
Yeah, so definitely elementary school. It was definitely very challenging. I mentioned earlier, you know, I definitely had sensory overload. You know, I was not used to like the structures of like the, you know, schedule of the day, or, you know, it's like I, you know, loud noise, like when students got really loud, and I was just like, I just got, you know, upset and frustrated. And I think I also just, at that time I was like comfortable. And some people are. Some people, you know, are comfortable like being alone per se, you know. But at the same time, it was like I was trying to, you know, connect with my peers, you know, and that was a struggle. It was not easy for me to. It's almost like trying to figure out like what they're talking about, or, you know, when's the appropriate time to, you know, engage in conversation or something like that. And then I think, you know, middle school, like I said, you know, I made the effort to, you know, be part of the band, the alto saxophone. I was part of a math club. I was part of it. I did go try going to a dance. It was still difficult. It was just, I just, it felt like it was just hard for me to fit in. I think part of me was like, I wanted to be with my peers. And another part of me is like, you know, having this anxiety, this heightened level of anxiety, or this, you know, this feeling of like, you know, I can't do this. And, you know, it's, so it was definitely challenging. Even in high school, I mean, I was kind of more focused on the academics. I mean, at times I kind of wish I could have been a little bit more involved socially, but again, I think, you know, sometimes it was just, and high school can be challenging for anybody, not even just for individuals on the autism spectrum. It's just, but I mean, it's almost like when you have, you know, autism spectrum disorder, and then you have all of these difficulties with adolescence. It's almost like a double-edged sword sometimes for, you know, it was definitely the case for me. It's been like for a little bit, and I'm sure it was the case for other, you know, high school, you know, individuals, you know, with autism and stuff. So I think, you know, like I said, I tried to form that autism awareness club. You know, I tried to put myself out there. You know, yes, was I academically successful? I mean, yeah, that's great and all. But I think, you know, I look back at it and it's like, you know, and I do have some positive moments, you know, in high school. I don't want to say high school is like the worst thing and was the worst experience for me. But like I said, it was not easy to navigate as somebody on the autism spectrum.
All right. So why don't you tell me a little about where you are now working wise? I mean, are you happy doing what you're doing?
Yeah. So let me give a little snapshot about that. So, so what I'll mention is after I graduated from, so I ended up actually going to Assumption College, and it's now actually called Assumption University. It's one of the colleges here in Massachusetts. Like I mentioned, I pursued my bachelor's in human services, and I also pursued my certificate in aging services. I did actually make some of my friendships, you know, at that time. I think it was a little bit easier there. But going back to this direction, I started off at an agency that worked with families and individuals, and it was like an ABA, Applied Behavioral Analysis company. I was an administrative assistant for human resources. So I did that for a little while. Then I went to an agency that worked with older adults and people with disabilities. I assisted the case managers with, you know, setting up the case files, doing the assessments for personal care, homemaking, those, you know, sorts of services that, you know, people might need. I also, you know, I did receptionist work. And I've also tried being a stay-at-home care case manager, which I had like 100 consumers on my caseload. And after a month, I was just, you know, it dawned on me. It was like, this was just not the career path for me. Over the course of time, I'm trying to, you know, because my passion is, you know, autism advocacy and awareness. And I mean, like, it's just been a passion of mine, you know, trying to help autism communities and stuff over the course of time. But eventually, I actually was at one point a autism peer specialist organization. So basically I don't know. Have you ever heard of the certified peer specialist for like mental health?
No.
So I believe in the United States, they have a certified peer specialist, which was originally designed to support, you know, it basically what it does, it takes people who have lived experiences with mental health issues and substance abuse, you know, challenges. And what they do is they connect with other individuals. So they bring the lived experiences and they're sharing that with the other individuals to promote, you know, support and guidance and, you know, trying to motivate them, you know, educate them, give them the information and resources, you know. It could even focus on independent living, and it can focus on a variety of different needs. But what I was doing is connecting with adults on the autism spectrum. So I'd do like check-ins, phone calls, you know, I might, you know, help somebody with employment goals, educational goals. And so I was doing that for a little while, and I kind of, you know, I'm thinking, yeah, this is something I do want to do. You know, this is kind of like my niche and stuff. And so unfortunately I had some, you know, health challenges along the way too, you know, between college and, you know, employment, where, you know, I had epilepsy. So, I mean, I had two seizures. One when I was in college, and there was another, like, I want to say like a couple of years ago, maybe. Both times I couldn't drive for a while. I had to suspend my driving for a little while. And I also have a thyroid disease. So I actually had to have my thyroid surgically removed because I was having symptoms of that too. So it was kind of like a medical roller coaster for a little while, which definitely had an effect on not really college, but definitely on employment. And I will say there was a time where I actually had to, I had such bad anxiety and I had really just really bad depression. Like I was at a point where at one point I just couldn't work, and I just, you know, I could not, you know, I couldn't function at work and I couldn't do the job. And so I tried applying for disability benefits, twice. Both times I was actually denied. And actually the reason that Social Security mentioned that was because, oh, autism will improve. And I'm thinking to myself, it's like, I don't think autism necessarily improves.
No. I mean, that's the case with everything between Social Security and between what you were talking about.
Exactly.
Social Security and insurance companies, is they think, oh, ADHD or ASD will improve with age. What they don't realize is it doesn't. It's something we're born with and something we're stuck with. Not to relate back to me, I was told, when I first graduated out of high school, my parents put me into, this is before we knew I had autism. I went to a University of Wisconsin, Oshkosh. They had a learning disability program. And we had a dinner where we met former students. And I sat down with this one student, and he said, and he literally sat there and he explained it to me. He's like, the difference between us and the rest of the student population is it takes them an hour to understand their work. It takes us 2 to 3 hours because it takes us an hour just to read, and it takes another hour for our mind to process that work. And then that last hour is to understand what we're actually doing.
Right.
And then the head of the program comes out and he goes, listen, I'm going to tell you all something, and this is going to be a shock. He's like, you all have a learning disability. You're going to live with it. You're going to die with it. But you can find workarounds for it that will help you out in life. And that right there was the shock to my system. It's like, wow.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like that was a really interesting experience for you. And I think this is the other thing too, you know, sure. Like the reality is we all have challenges and we all have problems that we go through in life. Nobody on this earth is going to get away from not having any, like from problems. I mean, problems, you know, challenges, losses. I mean, it's like, one of the things I've had to learn over the course of time, and this kind of goes back to what I was talking about. So after a while, I was like, you know what? I'm not going to let this happen. I'm going to, you know, continue to advocate, and I'm going to try to see if I can get back to work again. And actually what happened was, is I connected with an agency that it's an independent living center that works with people with disabilities. And so at one point I was in a temporary position running a workshop series on independent living and autism spectrum disorders. I did all the marketing. I did all the, you know, communications. I reached out to get speakers, you know, that can share about services, supports, experiences, perspectives. After that, I actually, there was an opening, you know, in a department that involves personal care management, which is, that's where I am to this day today, where as a personal care administrative assistant. So I do like, you know, databases and, you know, spreadsheets and those sorts of things.
So that leads me to my next question, is what brought you to Jacqueline?
What brought me to Jet? Well, first of all, I actually wanted to personally, you know, thank her, you know, for connecting me with you. Because I mean, I'm really, like I said, I'm happy to be doing this today, and I'm glad we were both able to, you know, connect and, you know, talk today. And so one of the things I was thinking about, like, is, you know, in addition to like what I'm doing right now, I kind of wanted to try to get involved with the autism community again. And at one point I was thinking, you know, I was, you know, reviewing, you know, her business, the ASD Life Coaches. And I was, you know, I was looking at all the different services, you know, all the different, you know, supports that they bring to, you know, individuals on the autism spectrum. And, you know, I think it really gave me time to really just take a step back and, you know, really help me to think and reflect, like, you know, I would want to try to be, you know, an ASD life coach, you know, too. And, that's when I, you know, reached out to Jacqueline, I think like 6 months ago. There weren't any like open positions as far as I know, at the time. 6 months later, as like now, basically, I reached out to Jacqueline again. And that's when I mentioned that I was still interested in, you know, pursuing the direction of ASD Life Coach and pursuing, you know, working with individuals on the autism spectrum. And that's, you know, when I had my, you know, first interview, and that's how, like, you know, you and I connected today. Mm-hmm. And I hopefully will have a, you know, a second interview, and we'll see how that goes. Yeah. You know, I think I'm, you know, even though, like, you know, the company I work for right now, I mean, has been very supportive. They've been, you know, very kind to me, especially, which to me is important, because I have struggled in organizations that are not as accommodating and supportive to people with disabilities. And I think that's one of the reasons why 80 to 90% of, you know, adults on the autism spectrum are unemployed or under. Mm-hmm. And that's because there's a lack of understanding and training, that sort of a thing.
I think I read somewhere it's 89% of those of us on the spectrum are unemployed. Mm-hmm. And to throw my opinion in there, I think part of the problem is the companies. They don't want to take the time to help, to understand. They want someone they can throw into the position, not have to worry about, oh, do they have problems with lighting? Do they have problems with sound? Why are they wearing headphones? Why are they wearing sunglasses inside? Why are they overreacting when they get stressed out? I mean, these are things they don't want to have to deal with.
That's exactly.
Yeah, go on.
No, I was going to say, that's exactly what it is. It's, again, I think it's the lack of this is what I have found. It's either there's not enough understanding of autism spectrum disorder, mm-hmm. or these companies just don't want to understand autism spectrum. No. It's kind of like they just want to sweep it under the rug and just, like you mentioned, you know, they just want to bring somebody in that can just, you know, do the job and just not have any, you know, because they consider us as, you know, having complaints and issues and, you know, that sort of a thing. And that's not true at all. Go ahead.
They want a cookie cutter employee. That's what they want. Someone they can mold to what they want and not have to worry about, hey, we have to reform and figure out what to do for this person to make them happy. We need more companies that are doing more for those of us on the spectrum, like Microsoft, SASS. There's a huge list of 45 companies that will hire those of us on the spectrum. And the problem with some of these companies, though, is they'll only hire those who just have autism. If you have anything else besides autism that adds to that complication, say me, I have ASD, I also have ADHD, I also have OCD, and I'm also dyslexic. I have a plethora of disabilities that all kind of feed off of each other and cause problems. They don't want someone like that. They want someone who just has ASD, who's brilliant with programming or math. Mm-hmm. You need a company that will say, hey, we're willing to hire you, help you, and understand you.
I absolutely agree with that, you know, and I like, you know, it's, I actually, at one point I was actually thinking about starting my own business, to do like autism, you know, consulting to, you know, employers and, doing like, you know, training. And I've actually made a training for my company, on autism spectrum disorders. And at some point my plan is actually to train the managers, and employees on how to help best support, you know, and guide employees and, consumers on the autism spectrum, because that's so important, that education.
Yeah, that's very important.
That's really, really important. And I absolutely agree. Like, you know, you're not, you don't want to just hire the person, you know, you want to have that personal and professional rapport with that individual. Yes. I think that is so, and unfortunately that's not always the case with companies. It's like, they just basically, they hire you and it's like, here you go, here's the work. You know, we want this, we want ABC XYZ, you know, it's,
I mean,
it can be sad, you know, for
it
some.
It is sad.
For some.
I mean, companies out there need to start hiring the neurodivergents, because we are the ones who are 10 times more brighter than the average person. You get someone who's on the spectrum who loves the program, you throw them into a programming position, they will thrive 10 times more than someone who is an NT who will burn out. We won't burn out because it's our passion. And then that leads me to my next question to you is, do you have your own hyper focus or special interest?
Yeah. I think for me, it's definitely hyper focus interest. Well, I think for me, like, my biggest interest is, you know, helping autism communities. I really like advocacy, you know, public speaking, you know, really trying to make a difference. And, you know, I think about, you know, I take time to reflect on, you know, like where I am in my life, you know, like what I'm doing right now. And I always get like this, you know, thought in my head, like, you know, helping people with autism. And, you know, even just seeing the stories and hearing the podcasts and hearing, because it resonates to my lived experience. And it also resonates to, you know, the lived experiences of others and the challenges that, you know, that it really involves. And just circling back to, you know, employers and stuff. So, you know, like at my company, I mean, I've worked with my boss for, you know, several months, and, you know, we have a good, really good, great rapport. And, you know, I think, you know, one of the things that my boss has noticed is that, you know, I'm very detail oriented, and that, you know, basically that I'm dependable. And I think, you know, that's what I really appreciate, you know, from a boss, is they don't just say, you know, see the, you know, the challenges, the hardships. They, you know, trying to take the strengths and trying to make, you know, production and, you know, efficiencies better. Like, you know, and I think, you know, just having the opportunity and having that sense of diversity and inclusion is like, because we all have strengths. We all have strengths, yeah. We all have talents. And that's, yeah. Do we have our hardships? Absolutely. I mean, that'd be just, again, that'd be even not even for people with autism. I mean, there's people who have, you know, daily medical issues. There's individuals that, you know, have mental health challenges, and that, you know, other issues that are beyond the scope. And, you know, it, but does that mean like that they can't be great contributors to the workforce? You know, I think you're just, it's putting like one assumption saying, oh, if they have these experiences, they're not going to be great workers. And that's not true. It's like, they're, you know, I mean, you have some of the greatest people that have gone on to do amazing things have come from very difficult backgrounds. They came from difficult backgrounds. They came from challenging, even like traumatic backgrounds, you know, yeah. And then you have people with autism, and then you also have people with autism and mental health challenges and stuff too. And that's, I mean, I was reading an article the other day, and one of the things that really concerned me was the rate of, you know, now the rate of suicide in adults on the autism, you know, autism spectrum. There was a study done in the UK, And I would just, you know, which in a way it makes, because usually like I'm thinking like, okay, there's adults, you know, and there's like older elderly adults. And part of the reason is because, you know, there's the isolation and the lack of social supports and stuff. And it's like, that should be a red flag for, you know, agencies, companies, organizations, professionals, like, you know, to say, hey, you know, these are people too that want to just be, you know, part of this, you know, celebration of life here. They want to be able to contribute to society. They want to be able to, you know, have relationships. They want to be able to do the same things as other people. You know, having those equal opportunities is so important.
Now, I want to circle back to school with you. Mm-hmm. How were you able to handle classes both in high school and college, or did you struggle with that?
So when I was in high school, it was definitely, I would say high school and college, it was definitely challenging. But I think, you know, college where it's kind of like, well, high school, look at it. So let's put it this way. High school, it's like you're in school for six and a half, seven hours a day straight. And then you have college where, you know, you might have, you know, one or two classes on a Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and then maybe one or two classes on a Tuesday and Thursday. Mm-hmm. And you have more availability and space and all of that. And it's like, I think, you know, just, you know, in terms of that, having that time management sort of a piece, you know, high school, you know, that's, again, that's challenging for anybody. But for me, you know, going to classes, you know, having to learn all this information, then going home for, you know, doing more work for another 2, 3, 4 hours. It was just exhausting.
Yes.
I think it's exhausting for anybody.
Yeah. Did you do college out of state, or did you do community college or a university?
So I ended up at Assumption all 4 years. It was a private university. Mm-hmm. And I got some scholarships and stuff, and that's, you know, I probably would have went the route like community college first and then maybe to a 4-year college or something, which I know some people do and stuff. And, is, you know, that's always an option, you know?
No, was assumption that you had campus and then you had dorms, or was it more like you just drove to school?
So for me, I was just more involved with, I was like a commuter. So I basically was just doing more of like, you know, driving to school.
Okay, so now let me ask you, if you had the opportunity, would you take the chance and put yourself in it through an actual 4-year university out of state somewhere to get that live alone experience?
That's a great question. I think, you know, for me, if I, you know, thought, you know, reflected back on that, I'd say, you know, maybe. I mean, I'm not going to say 100%, you know, yes. I definitely think it could have been, you know, it, you know, like a trial sort of thing. But I think, you know, for me, I had, like I said, I mean, I had the health and medical stuff that I had to deal with. And then also, especially with transition, that can be very, I mean, now it's like it just got bigger, you know, you're going from high school to college where it's like, you're here local, but now you're going out to another state. It's like, a whole different, you know.
Yeah. Scope. Yeah. I understand that. I mean, with me, my parents right out of high school threw me into college and I couldn't handle it. And then I waited until 2006. And I did my 4 years online, got my bachelor's. And then 4 years later, I went overseas for my master's.
Wow, that's amazing.
And I was older then, so I was more prepared for it.
Yeah.
What I wasn't ready for was the level of stimulation the minute I hit that airport. And all the factors coming in at me of, oh, you can only have one parent with you at the gate. It's because of 9/11. There's nothing we could do. And the stress of me going away, I had my very first meltdown. My mind didn't know what was going on. All I knew, I was in tears, crying, cussing out the guy behind the desk. And at that point, my father just said, your mother will go with you. She's closer to you. And we were lucky enough that where the gate was, there was a glass wall with a revolving door and a guard. And my dad was able to sit on the other side. So he was able to see me head off onto the plane. And my mother was with me while I waited until the boarding call. And then once that boarding call came on, it's like a light switch flipped. And I stopped crying and my mind just turned.
That sounded like a really difficult experience that you
had. It was. Now, talking about difficult experiences, how did you handle COVID?
So, basically, I was basically cooped up in my house pretty much like the last year or two, because most of the work I was doing was remote. And I think, you know, for me, like, I think, you know, COVID has really had an impact on not just me, but a lot of people. But I know for me, like, it was definitely anxiety, depression. It was just really difficult, you know, to connect with people, you know, because I was so used to like going out in the community and, you know, having, you know, lunch or dinner with a friend, mm-hmm. or kind of, you know, go see a movie, or, you know, and you know, and I'm very fortunate. I have been able to do that, or, you know, go do something like mini golf. So I think, and even like, I'm reflecting on it, and, you know, it's like, even right now, like, there are days where it's just like, I'm so used to being in my own house. It's like, I don't even want to go out sometimes. you're so used to the routine, but at the same time, it's like, I do want to be, you know, connecting with people and stuff. And I want to, you know, be involved in communities and stuff. But I just, you know, hearing the whole COVID, you know, news, and just, it can be mentally draining. You know, I think not just for me, but for a lot of people, you know, and we're just trying to, you know, we're trying to adjust to what's called the new norm, per se. So I think, you know, it just, I do actually remember, I was laid off, a couple of months after, like, we first heard of COVID, which I think was like somewhere in the beginning of 2020. I don't remember exactly what month, but I remember like a couple of months later, basically, because that's what was happening. People were, you know, they were getting laid off, or they were, they basically losing their jobs because the companies are trying to save money and stuff, and it really had an effect because of that pandemic and mm-hmm. stuff. So that was another adjustment for me. Fortunately, I was able to make a connection with another company, and that ended up working out. So I know that it was not the case for all these people that have lost their jobs because of the COVID and stuff. I'm sure, you know, it took them months, weeks, you know, it took them time to actually find another job, you know? And so it's crazy.
Lastly, I want to talk about dating and girls with you.
Sure.
How is the dating scene with you?
So I think right now, like, I'm kind of like 50-50. I'm kind of like, it'd be nice to meet somebody special, but I think at the same time, it's like, I'm not feeling it like right now, like to be in, I mean, middle and high school. I mean, I've definitely, you know, there were some, you know, some girls that I met, you know, when I was in middle and high school that, you know, I thought, oh my God, they're so, you know, beautiful. And, you know, my God, you know, like, I mean, I could go on a date with them, something like that. But I've also have experienced some difficult interactions, I think, with, you know, with women in the past, like, you know, especially high school and college. And I'm just like, and sometimes it's like, it's not, it's almost like, it's not you. It's just, it's the not you, it's them kind of a thing. It's like, and that's, you know, I mean, that is part of, you know, life in a way, you know, but at the same time, it's like, I mean, I want to be, you know, I want to be accepted for who I am, you know, and be accepted. Like, listen, you know, this is what I have and, you know, this is what I'm doing and I'm doing the very best I can in life. Honestly, sometimes I even hear relationships can be complicated.
Yes.
So that's, again, not the case for all relationships. I think for me, what's really important right now is I'm still, you know, I'm back in the workforce, you know, I'm working on building my life more. I'm working on, you know, basically myself. I think that's the first and foremost important thing is you have to be able to focus on, you know, yourself before you have to be able to focus on, you know, others and stuff. But I mean, dating, I would, you know, I'm definitely something that I'm keeping in the back of my mind. But it's also, you know, taking other things into consideration, you know, as time goes on.
And lastly, where can people find out more about you?
So basically people can find out more about me via autismpeer.com. So that is the website again, autismpeer.com. I have blogs, publications, and I'm sorry to say, I have not updated that website in quite a while. I've had a lot on my plate. And I mean, I'm also on LinkedIn. If anybody, you know, if anybody's interested in, you know, learning more about like my professional background, that sort of a thing. Yeah, that's pretty much all I have in terms of the social media piece.
And that's it, everyone. That was Ryan Lynchfield, PCM Administrative Assistant. I'll catch you in the next one. See you there, everyone. Yeah.
How I miss the way things used to be. I'm no big fan of now. I must have some sweeter memories somewhere in the cloud. Welcome to the new normal. Welcome to the new normal. Welcome to the new normal. Shout. Welcome to the new normal. Welcome to the new normal. Welcome to the new normal. Shout. Gonna miss all you used to be. Gonna miss all you had. Consigned to the dustbins of history like opinions from your dad. Welcome to the new normal. Welcome to the new normal. Welcome to the new normal. Shout. Talk to the freaks. You can talk to just about anybody you happen to meet. It ain't what it was, and it is what it is. Time.